Hi there, Michelle here. Maggie and I have been on a very unexpected hiatus, moving through everything motherhood, grandmotherhood, life, and all the things in between. But we're back and excited to share this episode of the Birth Realm, Australian Free Birth Stories, with you. In this episode, Maggie and I sit down with Jess, who takes us through her kaleidoscopic free birth journey, chatting about all things that she needed to do to feel safe during her birth and right up to the birth of her beautiful placenta. So grab your favorite drink, take a seat, or hit play as you hit the road and enjoy this episode of the Birth Realm.
Good morning, Jess. It's so nice to have you here on the podcast this morning, and Michelle and I are really looking forward to chatting with you.
Hi, Jess.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I too am really looking forward to chatting with you guys.
Do you want to start off this morning by just telling us a little bit about yourself and your family and how many babes you have?
Well, my name is Jess Etzel, and I have four daughters. We live on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. And my partner and I, we both work from home. We homeschool our girls. I guess we, especially in these times, are just trying to reconnect back to sovereignty and family and simplicity and freedom and all those things that I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this can relate to. So that's pretty much us. I do a little bit of birth preparation work with women, meditations, debriefs, online mentoring. Not that I really like that word, but, and I also run a network marketing business. So that's pretty much me. And then obviously my priority and my big focus on my babies is Dorothy's only, she's 5 months old now. And then our eldest daughter is about to turn 9, which is crazy. So that's us living on the Sunshine Coast.
Beautiful. Can hear the birds in the background. It
Amazing.
sounds so nice.
Yeah, it's the most gorgeous day, like blue sky, green trees. Yeah, we're really lucky here.
Well, thanks for telling us a little bit about yourself and your family. We'd love to, just know a bit about your birth journeys and especially your birth and pregnancy journey with Dorothy, if you want to kind of tell us about your path and what led you to the free birth journey.
Oh, such a massive question when I saw that one come through. But I guess there's a few moments that led me to knowing that this was the path for me and for us. I always had a feeling that birth was sacred and normal and just something different than what the narrative or, the what a lot of people around me were experiencing, that it could be potentially different. And so even before having babies was on my radar, I was drawn to, like, I used to teach prenatal yoga, and I did a sacred birthing immersion and started to dive more into that world. And so when I fell pregnant, I thought, which was not planned, it was very unexpected. And we are together now. It's my partner Carl, for those of that know us. But at the time when I fell pregnant, he wasn't ready to be a dad, and we ultimately ended up parting ways at that point. And so everything that I thought that I knew about sacred pregnancy and sacred birth and all of that really just totally went out the window for me. And I went through a really difficult journey where I decided that I was going to have her on my own. And I ended up finding a new partner in that time, and it was just a very, there was a lot. And a lot that I didn't address, and I didn't even know that I needed to address. And so my life, like on the outside, was just not grounded in safety or celebration or ritual or any of the things that I feel are so important in that rite of passage now. But at the time, like, I was living with my mom and really just trying to survive and get through that period. And I went to birthing classes with my new partner, but obviously, it wasn't his baby, and there was a lot of disconnection. And so there was a lot that just didn't get dealt with. And I learned about, like, the pros and cons of epidurals, and I knew that I didn't want to get induced. And I'm really grateful that I knew that, because I ended up going she didn't decide to be born until 42 plus two, which is so normal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And even beyond that is so normal. But at the time, you know, as many mamas can relate to, that pressure for induction and pathologizing what's happening in the body was so huge that I literally felt like, you know, am I going to kill my baby by not intervening? And so her birth experience was quite traumatic for me. And after that, I really kind of lost faith in what birth could be, or what my intuition had told me that birth could be. And I stopped teaching prenatal yoga, and I kind of stopped being in that world at all. And then a couple of years later, I had my second daughter. It was a hospital birth as well. And I stumbled the universe just gave me the gift of a midwife who was more physiologically birth minded. And so she, like, we had the low lighting and, you know, I guess what you would consider to be a typically good hospital birth is what I experienced with her. You know, at the time I thought no interventions. I can look back now and see that there were still many interventions and many kind of underminings of my power and my experience of that. But at the time, I left that birth feeling like that birth could be amazing. And then after that I decided that I was going to study midwifery, because the midwife at my second birth, I felt it was her that was the reason that my birth was so good. And I was like, if I could be a midwife like that, if I could do that for women. And so I went into studying to be a registered midwife with this, and I say this with love for myself, but I guess with ego around what my role could be for another. And ultimately now I can look back and see, like, just a desire to be seen as important and significant, and to feel like that I could hold people in their moments of vulnerability. So I did, you know, the typical bachelor degree, and I went to I remember sitting in classes and them talking about, like, most of my classes were amazing, like teaching about not unassisted birth, but physiological birth. And I remember going into my first placement and just thinking that none of what I had learned was being practiced in the hospital. And it was so confronting, my very first birth that I witnessed. I didn't know the woman, and it was incredibly traumatic. And Michelle, like, during my pregnancy, this was one of the things that I really had to look at this time, around the guilt that I was carrying for being witness at that birth experience that was so traumatic for that woman. And as I went on, I still had this belief that I could change it, and that I could be integral within that system. Yeah, but then, oh, sorry, Dorothy's just woken up. Do you mind if I just run and grab her?
Totally okay.
She wants to brief on this as well. Okay. 1 second.
I can already feel myself floating off into this story.
Me too. And I love that Jess is chatting about midwifery and what brought her into that, because I think that's such a...
super potent.
Yeah, I think it's such a common thing for so many people who go into midwifery looking at it like that, that they're going to be helping and supporting, which is the true essence of midwifery. And then they're sort of...
But it's just not like that.
No, it's unfortunately.
Okay, I'm back. Thank you.
Welcome.
Maybe that's the universe saying, okay, skip along a little bit.
No, not at all. We were actually just saying that it was so great that you mentioned about what guided you towards midwifery, because we feel like it's a very common reason for people stepping into midwifery. But then once they're in, they see that it's not actually like that. But you going into it was for the true essence of midwifery, like to... hold that space and hold women and in their most vulnerable moments.
Exactly. So
yeah. We love that you've chatted about that.
Yeah. And then at that time, I had a social media account that I enjoyed posting about, like, what I was learning through my degree. And I had a lot of anger towards the system And I guess I would pretty vocally share about that and just try and save women from that. And like the women, because there's a certain number of women that you follow through in your degree, and time again, it's like we would cover it all, but in those moments, all the knowledge in the world doesn't override not having that safety in that space, or not having people in that space who even understand undisturbed birth, or you know, why that is so important. It's just not recognized at all. So I think, yeah, my time studying midwifery was a tremendous factor that ultimately led me to birthing outside of the system, or unassisted birthing with Dorothy. When I fell pregnant with my third daughter, Elska, I decided that I was going to have a home birth. And that was just a no-brainer to me. I'd learned that home birth was really safe. And now I believe much safer than hospital birth, personally. Well, not even personally, that's just how it is. But and so I hired an independent midwife, and I kind of thought this is like the gold standard, like home birth with a private midwife, continuity of care, like everything that I had learned in my degree. I was like, yes, okay, I'm going to experience all of that this time. Like, and again, at the time in that birth experience, like there certainly, it certainly was an incredible, all of my births were life-changing. And my third birth was, I mean, it's hard. At the time I felt that it was incredible, apart from when it came time to birth my placenta. And that part of my birth, it was evident to me in hindsight that independent midwives are still maybe not quite as, I mean, they have a little bit more autonomy in their practice, but ultimately they are still serving their registration. And that really came out in my home birth when it came time to birth my placenta, when I had bleeding that I hadn't even noticed. So I was feeling totally well, but that they had deemed was not okay. And you know, like the gloved hands, like right in there when I'm receiving my baby, you know, telling me that I, you know, that I don't know how to handle my own baby, or just so many moments of, you know, I declined vaginal exams, but even the fact of like having to have those conversations, like I'd never recognized before that even being offered that stuff and having to think about that stuff, if it's not innately coming from within you, is an intervention. Like it's everything is an intervention. And I ended up having Cinto at home with Elska with my placenta, and then this like just nothing sacred about the birth of my placenta at all, and like them fishing like membranes out of my cervix with forceps, and you know, while I'm trying to, I'm like my baby's like an hour old, and you know, just that whole time just in my opinion, needlessly disturbed and altered. And I do think that having the Cinto, I know, and I had that for each of my first three births, it affected me, my mental health, depression, anxiety in my postpartum period. And I know that that is shown in like in studies as well, that that does happen. I think you're 30% more likely to experience those things if you have Cinto at all during your birth, or after your birth. And so again, I was like, I didn't understand why I didn't feel better after I'd had Elska, because I was like, you know, I did everything right, is what I thought. You know, I had the midwife, I was at home, you know, and I blamed myself. Like I didn't prepare enough for the placenta, and I didn't have tinctures, and I didn't have that. And some of that might be true, but ultimately my birth and my pregnancy were, that they had interventions that led to things. So the second midwife who was meant to come to my birth ended up sleeping through her alarm. And so a different midwife from the practice came that I hadn't built a relationship with. And although, you know, she's really experienced, just in terms of personality types, isn't someone who I would consciously invite into my sacred birth space. And just even her walking into the room, you know, now it's so clear to me that that is of course going to affect my feeling of safety, my feeling of being able to surrender, just everything that's required. Absolutely. Yeah, having someone that I didn't even know was coming. And I also had a lot of people here for that birth, you know, photographers and the two midwives and my mom and like my kids, and felt very observed. And so this time to skip forward, so Dorothy's 5 months old now, and when I fell pregnant with her, again, Carl and I weren't expecting for her to be coming. And so when to put it mildly,
surprise.
Yeah, well, now of course we wouldn't change a thing, but at the time we were like, oh no. Because I think Elska's birth, and especially her postpartum, which we felt so unsupported, I felt so unsupported in that postpartum, it really affected our family negatively. Yeah. Like, we had a really hard time adjusting to life with three kids, and we felt like we were still kind of like drowning a bit when I found out that I was pregnant again. So we were like, oh my God, like, okay. And it took Carl a really, really long time to accept that a baby was coming. And so when I was about 5 weeks pregnant with Dorothy, I had a dream. And all I can explain for when Dorothy landed in my womb is that she activated something in me that took me beyond what I had known of life and of pregnancy and of being a mother up until then. And so I would just get these dreams and these downloads, and I felt so connected to my intuition. And at 5 weeks pregnant, I had this dream, and it was of me in our like ensuite shower, and I was in there alone, and I felt totally at peace, and she was being born, like she was like coming out at that point. And I actually saw that it was a boy in my dream, but so I birthed my baby into my hands in the shower just as the moment as Carl walked back into the room. So in my dream, like, I interpreted that like he'd gone to like resettle one of the kids or something. So it was just him and I in the shower, and it was like I woke up after that dream, and my pillow was wet with tears because it was just so beautiful and so peaceful and so moving and so normal. And when I was holding our baby was just so well and so calm and just so perfect. Like, it moves me to tears even to think about that dream now, because I was just like, oh my God, like, it just was the most amazing dream, and it felt so real. And then I fell back asleep, and like instantly I went into another dream of birthing my baby, but I was in this white room, and there was all these people, like 10, 15 women with clipboards like all around, and it was just sterile, but it was like the lights were low. And I birthed my baby, and then I didn't know where my baby was, and the blood and the room just started filling up with blood, and I knew that it was my blood, and Carl wasn't there and the baby wasn't there. And it was horrific. And I woke up from that dream crying as well, but not from joy, but from like trauma. And I just knew that it was my baby clearly telling me how they needed to be born, and that it wasn't anything to do with that system. You know, by this time, everything with COVID had started, and all the things that many of us know about that are going on in hospitals, it's like now been amplified 500 times with everything that's been going on in the last few years. And I just knew that that wasn't like anything to do with that wasn't for me this time, that wasn't going to be part of my story anymore. So that dream set me on this path. And I remember at uni, you know, there was a few stories about women free birthing that ended like terribly. You know, they were the examples that were given. And I did have a big fear of free birth, like even the word, like now I think it's such a beautiful word, but at the time it's like, if you free birth, you're irresponsible or you're reckless or you're dangerous, or, you know, like. And so I still had some of that conditioning right at the start of this pregnancy, when and so I would say things like, you know, I'm not deciding now, I'm just going to take it one day at a time, I'm just going to do the next thing that feels right, because I couldn't yet say yes, I'm free birthing, or I don't want any medical care, even though in my heart I knew that I had to kind of take it in baby steps during my pregnancy and let it come bit by bit and not make the decisions, you know, for the whole thing right at the start. That felt too much. And so, of course, as I knew it would be, like bit by bit, like whenever it would come to a time where, you know, in the routine care model or whatever, you know, there's a scan you should do now, or there's a test you should do now, or whatever. Every time it came to those kinds of time milestones, which I was aware of because I'd had three babies before in the system and, you know, studied to be a midwife as well, I just knew just each time that that would come, it just felt like just such a no in my body, and so I didn't do it. And then before you know it, it was like, okay, well here we are at, you know, 40 weeks. Obviously it wasn't that simple, but okay, then, you know, we ran out of time for any of those kind of scans and tests. You know, at some point I knew that, you know, that I actually changed my belief just from the experience I had because of my heightened intuition. It just became so clear to me that those scans and those tests, and they can really be damaging in terms of disconnecting you from your intuition. All I can say is, like, my safety throughout this whole experience was my intuition, and anything that would disturb that or undermine that or make me question that, I just removed from my space. I knew that physical safety through all of this was directly related to my emotional safety, and that's where my focus needed to be. And so I did do I had a blood pressure, like a cuff from when I'd been studying. And so I got Carl to take my blood pressure a couple of times because I did have some swelling towards the end of my pregnancy that I was, you know, working through on my own. And I made some diet changes and that kind of thing. I just always knew what to do when, because my baby just was speaking to me like telepathically, or, you know, on this soul level. So I think two things. Yeah, my past experience with my birth, with my third birth especially, just realizing that, yeah, independent midwives are like, it's not that much different really, that any time that you center a care provider as an expert over you, you're just introducing so much risk into your experience, because it's not you and no one else is in your body, no one else knows your baby, and so how can they know what is safest, you know?
And it just takes you away from your intuition as well.
Exactly. And it's like that's the piece that tells you, okay, I need to move, or something's not right here. And, you know, if you're not listening to that, you're not connected to that, potentially there might be things that you don't listen to, or that you don't connect in with, that you need to. So, I mean, I've heard of other women, you know, who intended to free birth, but their intuition led them towards doing different discoveries or things, and it turned out that wasn't the path for them. And it's like their baby let them know that.
Yeah, so it's like we need the gold standard to be recentering women as the expert, you know, putting them at the forefront, allowing them to come to the decisions and allowing their babies to guide them.
Yeah. And I mean, we don't question that with any other species. Like, it's like even like vets or anyone working with animals, it's like, you know, that you don't disturb it because you're going to screw it up, you're going to introduce, you know, you're going to muck with the hormones or the bonding, or, and we seem to respect that, well, not always, but, you know, there's at least an acknowledgement of that, but that just is totally not acknowledged at all in humans, which is so bizarre.
That's so true with animals, you know, we don't mess with nature, but then when it comes to us, it's the norm.
We want to micromanage every single little detail to the point where we're going the other way. We're causing what we're seeing now, which is, you know.
And we allow people to think they know more than us.
Yeah.
When it comes to our bodies.
Yeah. And then that continues on, like, once we've had our baby. Like, the biggest difference, like, in this postpartum, I have just felt like a completely different person than when I birthed my first three babies. Like, there is no comparison, no comparison at all in terms of my assurance of myself and just knowing what is right for me and my baby. And like, we still haven't seen a doctor or anyone medical. I've taken her to the chiropractor once, and that's it, because I just know, we're just so connected that I know what she needs. And even my recovery after having her in the way, and it was a hard birth, like Michelle can vouch for that. It was hard, but yet I felt so well afterwards. I felt like I didn't have tearing or swelling or injury, or, and I lost like a fair amount of blood, I would say, but I didn't feel like I've just never felt more well after any of my births. And I think that that is because the full circuit of everything that is meant to be birth was allowed to take place. Like every, if that makes sense, like every hormone that was meant to fire fired, everything that was meant to happen in nature's design has allowed the space to happen. And so it's like there's nothing leaking out from that. It's, I don't know, that's the way that I kind of see it in my head. Like it felt complete.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. I love how you described it as each hormone was allowed to fire when it needed to fire. There was no disturbance, there was no interruption.
Yeah.
And it was just honored. And yeah. I know that you're going to tell us about your birth story. And like you said, it was hard. And I'm, yeah, looking forward to you talking about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I'll just jump right in. So yeah. I have a history of very long, by my standard, labors, you know, like 52 hours from first sensation, and like the sensations are quite intense quite quickly in my body, and like weeks and weeks and weeks of like pre-labor and the body warming up, and I always kind of thought that that was like a problem, like that my body took a long time, maybe because I still hadn't worked through enough stuff. That was the belief I took into this pregnancy, and so I really tried to do as much of the inner work as I could to try to have a different birth experience. And that was probably where my first lesson was, that I was perceiving that because I was birthing unassisted, you know, this was going to be my orgasmic birth, and this was going to be my like it was going to feel really good. It was going to feel different. And so when I started getting like sensations and tightenings and all of that, you know, that went on for weeks, I didn't want to look at that. I was like just trying to ignore that, because in my mind I was like, okay, well, this might be happening. But then when I go into labor, you know, I'm manifesting like a 6-hour birth. And so I still had a lot of that going on. And so I think, yeah, so I had weeks of that tightenings and like, is this the night? And it's not the night. And then waking up in the morning and trying not to be attached but feeling so attached, but then like saying things like knowing that this time would never come again, but not being able to really ground into that. And so, you know, just those last few weeks before your baby actually comes can be really difficult. And I experienced that this time too, even though it was my fourth baby. And I knew it all logically. I think that there's like, I've come to see it now. Like I do think it's part of it. Like it's part of the preparation. It's part of like the softening and the cracking open and the surrendering. And so all of my previous births had started at 6 a.m, all of them. But this one started at like 6 p.m. And so again, I was like, I had just had so much attachment still. I was like, this is going to be different. Now it's starting at night. Like all the inner thoughts that you don't kind of speak out were going on. And then so that first night we had blown up the pool, but like I hadn't really, I think maybe it's a lot to do with the collective pain in the world at the moment and the state of the world, but I tried to bring little splices of like sacredness into my pregnancy, but no matter how many times I tried to pull back to that, it just felt like it wasn't glorified in any way. It was just normal. It was just plain, and it was just birth. And so I hadn't even put up fairy lights or anything like that. And I started having surges that felt manageable, you know, compared to what I know it can get like. But it would be like that that ramping up. And at this point, my waters hadn't broken. I hadn't lost my mucus plug or anything like that. So I was still like, is this it? Or is this just another night that is like preparing me? But they did feel like there was a shift in the air. And I'm pretty sure, Michelle, that I messaged you and I said, something might be happening.
Yes.
Something might be starting to happen. And so like my family went to bed and I stayed up a lot of that night because I was finding it hard to get comfortable sleeping just in the living room. Like I had some music on and then I would turn it off and listen to silence and just walking. And like out the back of our house, there's lots of trees, and there's always owls in the trees, and so you can always hear the owls at night. So I was kind of like, it was a really, really, really still night, like no wind at all, the trees weren't moving at all, but I could hear like one owl like hooting. Yeah, just I guess really connecting into that feeling of like that everything was about to change, but I still didn't know what was coming. And I kind of thought in my head, like I'd let people know, I thought, okay, because I'd had a vision, not a dream, but a vision that my baby was going to be born as the sun was rising. And so then of course I attached to that and I was like, okay, cool. Like it's probably going to ramp up soon. And, you know, I'll be holding my baby, you know, looking out as the sun's coming up. And so when the time got closer and closer to that, and it looked less and less likely that that was going to happen, I started feeling like really uncomfortable feelings arising. I didn't want to look at like that maybe this was going to be another like 3-day labor and that there was something wrong with that because it was meant to be different. And so then, yeah, of course the morning came and I was still getting sensations, but they were kind of like petering off and on. And, you know, as what happens, you know, often when your kids wake up and you're brought back into the 3D world, everything kind of peters off because it's not, I guess, emotionally safe to go there when there's so much activity going on around. And not for everyone, but that's just kind of been my experience. And so, yeah, we had the day of, I can't even remember what we did. I don't think it was much. We just kind of potted around. Yeah. And then, and I think mum took, no, that's right. No, we weren't actually, that's a different part of the story. But a lot of my pregnancy preparation was around work, around wounds with my mother. And so for this birth, I had decided that I wanted it to just be Carl, Michelle, the kids and I, and that was all. And so I hadn't invited my mum to come to the birth, and things at that point were still not resolved. And so, oh gosh, Michelle, can you remember in that day? I don't know. I think
on the day,
like so that day Carl's- in between.
Yeah, Carl, or in between or the day of your birth?
Anyway, it obviously Carl's isn't sister. Relevant to share about, but yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Carl's sister we were in contact with because she had offered to come and be at the birth, but there'd been stuff brought up there as well. Like I guess all my wounds in pregnancy this time were around like my relationships with women and that lineage, like that red thread, and then connections with sisters and all of that, and that, yeah, just not feeling safe with women was really being triggered in a big way for me to look at. And look, and I still don't think that I've completely gone through all of that, but it certainly has brought a lot of awareness to that area in me that needs healing. But yeah, so I think
we that tried was a to get big part of your preparation.
It was, yeah. Yeah, even to feel like, you know, like what the idea of what conscious women do, like they have their sisters gather and they have like a blessing way or a mother's blessing. And they have like women who come and rub their feet. And I guess because of old wounds, I'd been very closed off to letting women into my life in that way. Like the friendships that I had weren't that kind of friendship at all. And so when it came time to like, you know, do you want a mother's blessing, I just didn't even feel like I had anyone that I could invite that held that kind of relationship with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was more around like surface connections of, you know, there was plenty of people I could have invited who would have loved to sip a mocktail and, you know, play count the baby bottles in the jar or something like that. But that wasn't the experience that I wanted to have. So in the end, I ended up not doing that at all. And so and there were people that I could have invited that I think like the connections were new, but I felt too vulnerable to be able to do that in case they didn't want to come, like that fear of rejection, of like just worthiness stuff arising around like being worthy of receiving women's love in that way. So a lot of that was missing even from this pregnancy. Yeah, as I said, there's still a lot of healing in that area for me, because I want to be there for other women so much. Like, I want to show up for women in that way, but to let women in to show up that way for me is not something I've been able to do yet.
And I think it comes back to safety as well, our sense of feeling safe and whether we do or not. And that can come up a lot during pregnancy too, and it really highlights who and where we feel safe in the spaces that we're in.
Exactly. And I think, like, a lot of that, as I mentioned, is related to my relationship with my mum. And we've had, you know, we've healed a lot over the years, but we've had, you know, a very painful relationship. Like, and I have a history in my childhood of being sexually abused by a family member, and it going unnoticed or unlooked at, I'm not, you know, not quite sure, but which obviously is a massive thing to experience in terms of, because birth is sexual. It is one of our sexual rites of passage. And so when your first sexual experience is not one of choice, not one of appropriate age, not one of consent or love or safety, it really changes that whole trajectory for you. And I am a big believer in that, like, that there is a plan. Like, I do, I personally hold beliefs around, you know, karmic cycles and things that we're here to experience. And so it's not to fall into, you know, being a victim of your life or anything like that, but just to recognize the truth of the impact that situations and, and events have on us for life. And they do. Yeah, one of the biggest reasons why I didn't want to have my mum at this birth was because of that past sexual trauma. It wasn't with my mum, just to be clear, but because I didn't have that feeling of safety. And it's just this, like, icky feeling around becoming sexual or speaking about sex. Like, we don't have a relationship like that at all, because it just brings up these really uncomfortable feelings in me. And so it makes sense to me. Like, my mum was at my previous three births. And also in those previous three births, I wasn't able to embrace any part of my sexuality in them. It was like that was suppressed because I couldn't go there because she was witnessing me and because of that relationship. So this time when I became aware of that, like Michelle in our prenatal catch-ups, and you really helped me to start to recognize a lot of this, which I'm so grateful for. I knew that part of that being emotionally safe was not having my mum there until the time when we could actually move through these things, if we could in this life, and that I needed to be in a space where if I wanted to, that any energy that wanted to come out could come out. So that sexual part of me was safe to come out if it was naturally arising.
So important. That's to feel safe.
Yeah.
And you spoke earlier how you didn't do, you didn't feel called to do the, you know, the normal generic testing and all that sort of stuff because you were guided to do this other work, which is the work that you needed to do.
Yeah.
And that needed to be looked at and really have a look at who you feel safe with, how you feel safe and where that's coming from. And that was the work that you did. And that's the important work.
Yes, exactly. Like, that is the prenatal care that I had, I guess, that I gave to myself, was looking at the wounds and the triggers and why I don't feel safe and what is there for me to look at and what is there for me to own and what is there for me to put boundaries up in places where, you know, I can't have that safety because of other people's stuff. And traumas that I'd carried from my time witnessing women's births in the hospital. And, you know, a big fear that I had going into this birth was around bleeding, like excessive bleeding, because I had witnessed at my first birth in the hospital, I witnessed like a woman having a very severe hemorrhage caused by the care providers. And so I felt like because I hadn't spoken up for her, that karmically I was going, that I deserved to experience that for me. So that was all, yeah, as you say, Michelle, like, yeah, I didn't go and get a blood test. Well, actually, I did get one blood test because I wanted to know about iron and zinc and all this new information I was learning about what actual health in a pregnant body is. But so I didn't do those things, but I did a lot of other things, as you say, inside myself. I went into my womb and connected with my baby and spoke to my baby and told my baby about my fears. I met with the entity of birth, and deepened that relationship. And just as you would any relationship, you know, when we're throwing shade at someone, or we're holding stories that aren't true about someone, that sets up a certain dynamic. And so that's all the work that I did, like looking at all of that in preparation for her coming. And yet I still will say, you know, and so that's what I thought, okay, you know, this birth's going to be a breeze. But I did, and I remember writing a post before I had her, I asked birth to decimate me. And those were the exact words that I used without really realizing what I was calling in. And yeah, I probably could have used some gentler words, but that was the experience I was meant to have, which was, yeah. So after that, going into that second night, which, like, this is so normal as well, like to have multiple nights of like intense labor that kind of peter off, and before it, like, there's nothing wrong.
Were those wounds and triggers coming up for you still when you were actually in labor?
I wouldn't say, like, around like sexual abuse and safety and all of that kind of stuff.
Do you feel like you had cleared those moving into labor, or were there still things that were coming up for you when you were in that space?
That kind of stuff wasn't so much coming up during my pregnancy, but what was coming up was just this attachment to how it should look based on what my intuition said leading up to it, like these dreams and these visions. Like, I was really attached to it being that way, and so it kind of unsettled me a bit when it wasn't going that way. And it made me really dig in to question, like, can I trust myself? Like, am I totally crazy? Am I doing something reckless? Like, yeah. I had to look at all of that, like, when things started not going the way, I mean, and nothing bad happened, but just when it didn't look the way that in my mind it should look, that attachment to that. So that was more the stuff, like really digging into that aspect of safety. Can I get quiet enough to hear my own, like, assurance within me, connecting with my baby as well? Like, I didn't have any monitoring, obviously, because we were just here. And I wouldn't have wanted that, but I just knew the whole time that my baby, I thought it was a boy, but my baby was healthy and fine. But yeah, I guess a few things like threw me around, like I guess there's a difference in, like, Marianne Williamson speaks about it really well, like around manifesting, like 3D manifesting is like, I create what I desire and I attract my vibration and I have control essentially over what happens in my life, and I am the creator of my life and all of that. And so that's a lot of, I guess, the personal development world, where it's like, you are the creator of your reality. And I'm not arguing with that or saying that that's not true, but then she speaks about moving beyond that into 5D reality, which is that you offer your life up to be used by the highest good. And so in that, it's less about you controlling what happens and you surrendering to what happens. And I think that that's what Dorothy's birth was initiating me into, letting go of how things need to look and trusting that I don't even know how things should look because I don't have the grand plan, if that makes sense. I don't know what lessons I need. I can't know those things because you don't know what you don't know. I can't know what I was meant to experience for who I'm meant to be next that still wasn't in place. So, yeah, like that second night. So she was born at 7, 4:33 in the morning. And so that second night, Michelle, I think I messaged you and I said, yeah, things are definitely happening. Yes. And like they were getting like stronger and more intense. And I just knew that it was okay, like it's happening now. And my kids were here and nothing was going to plan. Like in my mind, they were all going to be in bed and I was going to labor and, you know, then receive the baby and then they'd all wake up and come and meet the baby. And it was not going down like that. Like they were crying and they were like needing snacks and like they all wanted to be held because obviously they could feel like this intense energy that was unsettling them. Whereas at Elska's birth, it didn't. Like they were there for her birth and they were like, it went perfectly. My mum was there for her birth as well. And so she kind of scooped them up on her lap and held them while I was in labor. Well, in those, she only came just for the very end, but while I was birthing Elska. But this time, because we didn't have that, like Elska, so she was just, you know, two at the time, she's two and a half now nearly, all she wanted was to like breastfeed and to just be on me the whole time. And the sensations were so painful, like I think it's okay to say that, because it wasn't bad pain, but it was intensity that was really requiring like my total and complete focus to even get through it. I just couldn't be there for her at all, and it just wasn't working. And, you know, she was crying and I'm feeling guilty and like I can't fully go into where I need to go because they needed me. So in the end, like, bless, when Michelle walked in, oh my goodness, the relief that I felt, because she just kind of scooped the kids up and took them into the bedroom to read a story. And then I could start to feel like, I mean, it was so hard, and I needed Carl there with me every second. Like I needed him to physically hold me up, because I was just not coping. Like, I mean, I was coping, I did it, but like in my mind was so resistant. It was just like, I can't do this. Like, this is not how it's meant to be. But then still coming back into that whole manifesting of like, okay, if you think that, you're going to create more of that. So come back to being, you know, come back to surrender, and this kind of like faking of surrender. I just feel like life didn't let me off the hook this time. It was like, no, you are really going to surrender. You're not going to fake surrender. Like, you are going to experience what it is to surrender, which is what I had asked for. But I didn't know how hard that would be. Yeah. And so then Carl's sister came and took the kids out, and she took them for a drive, and then she ended up taking them to the ginger factory and getting them breakfast. And it was so amazing because they were cared for and they were happy. Abby was really sad that she missed the birth, and we had to talk a lot about that afterwards because she so wanted to be there. She's my daughter who's almost 9. She wanted to take photos on her Polaroid of the baby being born, and because that didn't get to happen, she felt really sad about that for the first probably month after Dorothy was here. Of course, that brought up some guilt for me, but it was also what I needed to go where I had to go. Like, I couldn't think about even my own children, like, what are their feelings going to be? Because I knew that emotional safety piece. It's like, I have to let myself go where I need to go to stay safe. And so that just had to be the priority. So once they left, it was just Michelle and Carl here, and Michelle just held the most incredible space for Carl and for I, and she didn't interfere at all. And I remember like looking at her a few times and like with this like save me kind of energy, like this isn't working, like fuck, like what's this is not meant to be like this. And then, you know, eventually she, you know, gently offered like, you know, when, is there anything that you're holding on to? Because at that point I'd shifted across from opening to bearing down, and it had been quite a while of this bearing down energy. And I believe that Dorothy was posterior, just from my own feeling in my belly and just how the labor, you know, played out and where I was feeling sensations. And so like previously in my other births, I'd pushed, you know, in my first birth was the only birth I actively pushed. And that took about 45 minutes for her to be born, and it was not a nice experience at all. And then for my second birth and my third birth, I didn't push at all. It was my body, like I didn't add anything to what was already happening. My body just, the sensations birthed Millie and Elska rather than me actively. And so again, like feeling with Dorothy, like that thought came in of like, I know you're not meant to push. And all these ideas around like what a undisturbed birth looks like, just fantasies, I guess, or ideals, without actually connecting back into what do I need now. But I was becoming impatient, like, why is this taking so long? And it's not that I thought something was wrong, I just was so beyond physically exhausted, like I just felt like I couldn't even give it any more than I was giving it, and it wasn't working, and why wasn't it working, and what's wrong, and you know, how long is this going to take? And just this like frustrated, like impatient energy and anger. And you know, and I said to Michelle, like I ended up saying, like, fuck this, like this is not how it's meant to fucking be. Like I done all this work and I still get this fucking hard birth. Like what the, you know, a lot of swearing. Sorry to anyone who doesn't like swearing. but that's what I said. And yeah, just, oh, I can still feel those feelings now of like how much I was holding on rather than just suspend all of that. I mean, it's hard to do when you're in that thrashing, like it was like my mind was thrashing. But then Michelle, I think it was when I got out of the pool and I walked down to do like to go to the toilet, because I wasn't sure if I needed to poo or if it was like that sensation where you can feel like baby's head, like right, you know, at your tailbone. And I went and I sat on the toilet, and just that action of, and I by that point, because I thought in my head, like, well, what's the alternative? Like, am I going to go to hospital at this point? Like, of course, I didn't feel like I needed to go, and I didn't want to go. But my gosh, did I for the first time experience compassion for women who choose intervention at that point? Because had I not been at home, had I been in a hospital room with like someone who was telling me, oh yeah, this is not normal, or this is not right, or yeah, the baby should have been born, because I think I was pushing for like 3.5 hours. And had I been in hospital, I know it would have gone so differently. And maybe I would have accepted something that wasn't actually what I wanted, because in that moment I was just spent. And thank God that I had created the safety around me of Michelle and Carl and being at home and not interfering up until that point. Like I'm so grateful that I gave myself that. And I mean, of course that I did, because that was the journey I was on, but it just allowed me to say like, yeah, it's not, it's got nothing to do with strength, and it's got everything to do with the safety and what you create for yourself. Yeah. Like what environment are you putting yourself in to basically go through your reckoning? And if you are in a, like, could you do that in a doctor's office? Like, can you really go in and face death and hell and every wound inside you while there's someone with a clipboard and taking notes? It's impossible. You just can't have that kind of death and rebirth when you are being monitored and pathologized.
And having people around you that are going to hold that space and not want to save you is so important. Like Carl stood so strong.
I know.
And, you know, had you been in hospital, they would definitely interject and say, I can help you. I can fix this for you. But that's not what you need.
Yeah, I've got goosebumps and tears in my eyes just thinking about like the space that you guys held for me. And not once when I looked at you, at either of you, was there fear in your face.
No.
Like not once. You just trusted me and you knew that I had this. And that was, and I knew deep down that I did too, but my God, it was so hard. And it was so much harder than I was expecting. And yeah, I got to the toilet, and by that point that I'd had that thought process walking down the hallway, like what's the alternative? Like I'm just here for as long as I'm here. And that was the moment of surrender. I'm just here for as long as I'm here, and I have no control. Nothing I can do can make this go quicker. Nothing I can do can screw this up. Like I am just here, and And no joke, like I sat down on the toilet and I felt something move, something come down, and I put my hand in and I could feel the baby's head. And then I was like, okay, the baby's coming now. Like I'm like, okay, now I know I'm okay. Now I know there is a head there. There is actually a baby in there. Because up until that point, like when you don't have any scans or anything, you're like, am I even pregnant? Like as crazy as that sounds, like all those irrational thoughts from the conditioning of like, maybe I'm going to push out a balloon or I don't know what's going to happen. Like, you know, because you don't have that. I mean, obviously you're very connected to this soul, but like when the fear comes up, those kind of, those thoughts can pop in. But yeah, I was like, okay, I can feel the head. And then from then, like it was hard, but then my energy kind of focused and I was not here anymore. And when I watch back the footage that Michelle took, I can see in my face that I wasn't here and I had actually surrendered. And it was like up until that point I felt like, you know, especially Carl, it's like this, the way that I see it in my mind is like this journey up this rocky mountain to like this gate, and it's like I dragged myself I dragged myself and Carl dragged me up to the top of this rocky mountain. Like it was like bloody and hard and like not Instagram worthy, or it's not even, it's got nothing to do with consciousness. It's just a pure primal experience. And then getting to the gate is the surrender. And once I could get myself through that gate, it was still really, really hard and painful. Like I find like a lot of women feel relief at that stage when the baby's like the bearing down. It's like because they can move with that energy. And oh my gosh, I just find it physically really like just cracks me open. It's just so difficult. And then I felt, so I got back in the pool and I was on my hands and knees and Carl was in front of me, and we'd done a beautiful, like a shamanic drum making workshop in my pregnancy. And so Carl was drumming for me for a lot of like the time that I was in the pool, which was so incredible. It just connected me right down into the earth. But I think he'd stopped drumming at that point and was just like holding me, I think, as I could feel her, or I thought it was a him still, feel him moving down. And then that grand opening as you feel the baby's head, you know, starting to emerge, and it's like you just, you can't do anything but surrender at that point, because it's just, it's moving through you and it's opening you, and there's, yeah, again, just letting go of that control. It's just happening, and it's like
just happening.
Yeah, there's just like this breath in rather than a tensing, like a opening. And then her head came out, thought it was a him, and when you can feel their body moving when it's still inside you. And it's just the craziest feeling. And I could feel the baby's head like fully like turn and do that, like, you know, what babies do when they turn and get themselves in the right place for then their shoulders to be born. And I just remember, like, up until that point, I hadn't really said much. Like I could feel where things were at. And then I said to Carl, if you want it, because we'd spoken about that he would love to catch his baby. And I felt like, that maybe we would catch the baby together, or that he would be a part of that experience. And at that point, you know, as the baby was coming down, I said to Carl, like, if you want to catch this baby, you better get in the pool now. And he was like, oh, like he hadn't realized like how close we were. And so he jumped in the pool and she like, you know, shot out. And just that feeling of relief, like I remember afterwards thinking, I am never doing this again. Like how did I make it through that? That was just colossal. And the relief and just this instant, he caught her in the water. Well, he actually kind of dropped her at first, and then, which was fine, she was fine, and then he passed her through my legs. And
you were on your knees.
I was on my knees leaning forward, yeah, so I kind of birthed her behind me, and so he caught her and passed her through and then came around. And there's this beautiful video, Michelle, that you took where we see her, and like we gently lift her out of the water, and she wasn't like, her eyes were open. Well, I didn't see it was a girl. Oh no, I did see it was a girl straight away, I think. Yeah. Yeah. So it was a girl straight away. And Kyle saw her as soon as she came out, and we were like, oh my God, it's a girl. Cause we already had three girls. And I was so sure that it was going to be a boy, but nope, here she was. She's just like, yeah, you just, this is total surrender. You have no control. You don't know what's coming next, and you don't need to, because it's all going to be fine. It's all going to be fine. You just have to trust. And yeah. And then she wasn't crying straight away. She had like a bit of tension in her body, but there was no fear in me. There was no thinking like that I needed to do something yet. So she was out of the water, and Carl and I had like a really beautiful moment where we like laughed and kissed, and then, you know, looked back down at her. And it was probably at least a full minute, maybe even a little bit longer, before she actually made a sound. And then I brought her up to me. And when I watch the video, I see like I bring her up to my left side, which is like your heart side. Mm. And I think all of the undisturbed births I've seen, women often, yeah, they bring the baby up to be where their heart is, just not thinking about that, but that's just kind of what naturally happens. Mm. And there was no one there. Like, it was just so... it was so healing, because there was no one there to tell me what to do, or to put their hands in our moment, or like we could just meet her and receive her and take her in and just land, like, or just start to be like, wow, like that just happened, and be in the reverence of that and the energy of that with her, and just have beautiful Michelle like just documenting that for us. Was so special.
Oh, and then, it was so special to be there. Oh, thank you again for that.
Oh, thank you. Like, I just knew, again, another one of those visions, I just knew that it was you who I wanted to be there at some point in my pregnancy. Yeah, it just couldn't have been anyone else for her birth. It just, yeah, it was perfect. And then I think about, yeah, Michelle cut us up some oranges, and we had like our, like a stainless steel bowl to like put the placenta in. And this was the part of my birth that I thought would be hard or that might have stuff for me to work through, because of my previous births. Like, I'd never birthed my own placenta. I'd always had the Cinto shot. And
wow.
Yeah. So it was the part of my pregnancy that I spent a lot of time working through, like bleeding and learning about the, you know, what to do. Like, I did have tinctures and all of that, which I did end up using. I ended up using tinctures and making sure my blood volume was really expanded through proper nutrition. And yeah, about 10 minutes, I think, after Dorothy was born, I started getting contractions to birth the placenta. And yeah, they were gnarly. They were really gnarly this time. But I was really aware, because, I mean, you still do have to go where you have to go to birth your placenta, because during my pregnancy, I really kind of recognized that my placenta was like my baby's twin in a way, or it was like its own energy. And I did a few sessions of speaking to my placenta around, you know, this is what I'm going to do, and this is what I'd like you to do, and this is how I'd like it to go, and what do you need? And, you know, just trying to deepen that relationship. And in the end, I ended up saying to my placenta, like, you know, when you're born, like, I'm going to receive you as a sister, like as a sister to my girls, like you are part of our family as well. And so, yeah, I started getting those contractions, and then I was like, oh, I think there's something there. And I reached down and I could feel like the placenta right there. And I was like, oh, I think it's right there. And, you know, should I, like, is it there? Like, should I just like pull it out? Like, it was right at my vagina opening, my vulva opening. And Michelle's like, just, you know, there's no rush, because there was, like, I was completely fine, the baby was completely fine, and there was no rush. And so to have that time to just wait and just allow more sensations to come, because the body my body knew what it was doing, and it did everything so perfectly up until then. Why would it suddenly forget?
Yes.
And so then more sensations came, and it kind of wasn't coming straight away. Like, it didn't just come out like in one, oh, there it is, done, not much thought. And then I realized that, because through my pregnancy I had believed that my baby was a boy, and I knew his name and I knew what he looked like, and I was really connected to that. And when Dorothy was born, when she came out, and she was this, because in my like vision, this little baby boy was like this dark little baby boy like Carl, and his name was going to be Mowgli. And when Dorothy came out, she was this white, blue-eyed girl. And her energy was the energy that I'd felt in my womb, but the physical of her was so different, to the point where I was like, oh, wow, like, did you and Mowgli like swap places like right at the last second and come through? And so I realized that like me birthing my placenta was that it was like the closing of that experience. And so I had to take a moment to like hop up on my knees and look out the window at the trees and to say goodbye to Mowgli. Because I just had to accept that, you know, it probably wasn't for this life. And it sounds, and don't get me wrong, like, oh my gosh, I've never felt such a deep love than I do with Dorothy. And it's not about that I would prefer another baby over her, but this grief of, again, this surrender that we get. We always get the experiences, Aunt Baba. We always get the experiences that we're meant to have. And as soon as I kind of gave that a bit of acknowledgement, that's then when my placenta was born.
Wow.
Because, yeah, I just had to accept that it was her who came, and it was her who was meant to come and not him, for reasons that maybe I will never know, and maybe I don't need to know. And then on we go. And she just has been, I mean, I feel the need to, I mean, I know that I don't need to, because the love is just beyond words that I have for each of my children, but especially Dorothy, birthing her totally unassisted and just this postpartum. I mean, there's no justification needed. And I think I've been able to integrate and been able to hold both, like the huge love and the huge grief. And it's always present in every moment of our lives, really, like that duality. And it's like the richness of birthing children and creating lives and being that portal, and also like the great loss that comes with that. Like, we can't open to those great expansive heights without being able to connect in with the opposite of that, which is the pain and the grief and death. You know, women who lose babies, or they don't lose babies, sorry, they didn't like lose them at the shop, but women whose babies die. And as women, we hold both, we hold all of it. So that's how she was born. And like, fuck, it was hard, and it was exactly what I needed to really deepen. Like, there is just like me as a mother since, I just feel so, I don't know, powerful. And I've let go of so many conditioned layers around what people think and conforming and, you know, the good girl and all of that. And it's just me really being initiated into my full power and my full potential. And yeah, I feel so creative and just so sure of who I am. And of course that will keep evolving, but yeah, I feel that I finally was able to, like, something Michelle was talking to me about in my pregnancy was like really going in and saying goodbye to the maiden. And I, even though I'd had babies, I don't feel like I had ever really had that experience happen in my birth. But I felt like this time, like that facing of death and that real surrender and that real not needing to be saved, but opening to what the experience was my rebirth into that mother archetype. And I feel that, yeah, I just feel so grateful for every, like, I wouldn't change a thing. There's no way I would ask for an easier birth than what I had. Because it just couldn't have been that way for me to be where I am now.
So potent, Jess.
Yes.
So potent. You speak so beautifully as well.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Oh my God. Thank you guys for listening. That felt so good.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there's something so I mean, probably obvious, but like that feels so healing to just share our stories and to just have women, like you women, to hold that present loving space. Yeah, it's amazing. So thank you so much.
It's such an honor. And I feel this space that's just opening up even now in the universe to allow your story to float into the ethos. It's like your story is going to land in other people's laps as well, and is going to be so transformative for so many other women to just to listen. So thank you for being here and sharing with us, and for all the others that are going to learn from your experience too.
And that's how it always was, you know, like we would share stories and we've kind of lost that, or the only stories that are shared are the stories of like the modern birth culture, which is not, I mean, they are women's lived experiences and they are valuable, but to hear stories speaking to like the essence of birth and the many colors of it when it is undisturbed helps.
Yeah, the pain and the beauty.
Yeah, both, because I've seen a lot of undisturbed birth stories that I don't feel, and maybe, and of course I wasn't there, and maybe it wasn't that way, and it's not wrong that it wasn't that way, but I haven't seen that many undisturbed births that share a lot about the pain. And that there isn't something wrong because there's pain, that that's part of that rite of passage.
Yeah, that suffering is such a big part of life in so many different ways.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes I feel like we're sort of almost told not to use the word pain and not to describe it, you know, as pain, when clearly that is some women's experience and it is pain. And I just feel like it can be quite damaging when we hold back from using that word, especially if that's the experience that was felt.
Yeah, for sure. Because if you start feeling that sensation, it's like this isn't meant to be this way, or you're trying to kind of spiritually bypass your way beyond what you're actually experiencing. It sets up like exactly what I like, this shouldn't be this way, rather than it is how it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's just so crucial having people in your space that are going to be comfortable with whatever you have to move through.
Yeah.
However that's going to look and sound and be.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the part that I just can't, like the wish that I have for every woman birthing is that she gives herself the gift of giving herself a safe space to go through that in.
Goosebumps from hearing those words.
It's, love that message, it's, Jess.
Yeah, so invaluable and such a important part, but so overlooked as well. And so, you know, can be so simple as well. Thank you, Jess. So much, Jess.
Thank you. Thank you both. Oh, I feel like I've just had a really good orgasm.
Yes.
We're just floating, by the way. We are here. We're just floating in all of it.
Yeah, I'm feeling like really, really grounded and rooted after listening to your story, Jess. I really feel like you were able to really provide us with the kaleidoscopic vision of what birth is. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you.